Well, we are here with Beth Seifert. She's our Bible study teacher, and you can find all the notes on our Bible studies tab, along with the podcasts. And we just highly encourage you to use the materials and have your own guided Bible studies. Thanks for joining us, Beth.
Thanks, Amy. Well, today we're going to pick back up in 2 Samuel, and we're going to go back to chapter 11, which we skipped over the last day or so because of the chronology and how it kind of jumps a little bit. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open to 2 Samuel. We're going to be in chapter 11, and we're just going to read the first 5 verses today. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon, when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house, that he saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, "Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she had been purifying herself from her uncleanness. Then she returned to her house, and the woman conceived, and she sent and told David, "I am pregnant." Okay, the last couple of days we've discussed the wars and battles that David has been fighting. No, that David's men have been fighting. And we discussed how it was strange that David wasn't with them when they besieged Rabbah, when Joab went and took that city, and how Joab even rebukes David at the end of chapter 12 for not being there when they're about to take that city. And now we see where David was. There's a whole lot of sin packed in these 5 verses. This sets the scene for the rest of chapter 11 and for most of chapter 12, so we're going to dig in and see where we end up today. The time when the kings go out to war was the time when the rains were over. There was grass in the fields, fruit on the trees, the corn was ripe, and thus there was food for the horses and men. Also, spring was a time when the heat wasn't so oppressive, so the act of fighting in and of itself wouldn't overly exhaust the men. This is when the events we read about the past 2 days were occurring. This is when Joab goes out to take the city of the Ammonites and destroy them, without David, who was the warrior for God and should have gone out with his army. So keep that in mind as sort of point number one. David made a decision to stay behind instead of leading God's people in battle. Instead, he was at home in his palace, enjoying life, relaxing, and possibly bored. That afternoon, after the heat of the day, but before it got dark, or he wouldn't have been able to see her, David arises from his afternoon nap, which is a very common habit of people who live in very hot climates, to rest during the hottest part of the day. And David goes to walk around on the cool roof. And from there, he sees a woman, bathing either in a bath or in her garden or through the open window of her house. And as he saw her, he lusted after her. He kept looking and decided to do whatever he could to get her. David saw a woman bathing and he should have looked away. She was not, at this point, doing anything wrong. She was bathing, and as the text says, to purify herself after her menstrual period. Now, granted, she could have done that inside. We have the idea that maybe she was outside or had the windows open, and she maybe could have closed those. But she didn't expect to be seen taking a bath. She was enjoying the spring air, just as David was in his walk on the palace roof. David's sin, begun with not taking care of his responsibility to lead God's army, gets further entrenched now as he takes a second look and stops to watch. We see things every day that we shouldn't. Those things are in our world. The sin is not in having seen those things, because sometimes you really, truly can't avoid them. But when you stop and dwell on them, and then act on them, you know you're sinning. Immediately, David sends to find out who she is, what her name was, whether she was married or not. If she was not married, his intention would have been to marry her. But when he inquired about her, he found out she was married. And he couldn't let her go. So far, we've got David where he wasn't supposed to be, lusting after a woman, and then asking about her. At any point here, he could have stopped. He could have looked away when he saw her. He could have looked, even lusted after her, and still not inquired after her. Once he found out the information that she's married, he could have stopped. but he didn't. It would have been better if he had not sought information about her at all, to have sought God and to practice some self-control and stopped right there. But even after finding out that she was married, and even more, who she was married to, he could have backed away, but he went forward. In 2 Samuel chapter 23, we'll see that David had a band of mighty fighting men, brothers in arms, basically his band of brothers. Chapter 23 lists all 37 of their names, and there, in verse 29, is Uriah's name. David knew exactly who Uriah was. This was his close friend. Yet even after he finds out that Uriah is the husband of this woman, he continues to follow his lust. David is abusing the power that God gave him as king. He had no business taking another man's wife, and he knew it. But he was the king. No one argued with him, and he did what he wanted to do. The consequences of his ridiculously selfish act result in the greatest threat to his reign. He brings it on himself by the sin and the guilt, anxiety, and all of the rest of the consequences that come with it. Had God intended for David to have Bathsheba for a wife, he could have taken care of it. Remember Abigail and Nabal? But David abuses the power he has, and the rest is a sad state of affairs. He sent messengers to invite her to the palace, and when she arrived, she came into the room or apartment where he was at, and not through force, because let's be honest here, the Bible doesn't sugarcoat this stuff. It tells us when someone is being forced into any situation. Later on, we'll see an example of rape, and God doesn't hide from it. This wasn't rape. She went willingly, and they lay together. From what we've seen of David's character in the past, especially in his dealings with Abigail and Nabal, I really think that if Bathsheba had protested, David would have listened. Remember when Abigail went to him as he was coming to murder her entire household? And she stopped him by reminding him of what he was really doing. If Bathsheba had spoken up and protested and said, "Don't do this wicked thing," I don't think that David would have proceeded. But she didn't. He listened to Abigail when he was bent on murder and had a taste for blood. This is lust, which, while it can be just as powerful as a taste for blood, could also be quenched in him had Bathsheba done what Abigail did and called David on his actions. If Bathsheba had said, "No, my king, do not do this wicked thing. God has given me to another man, and he is my husband. Do not disgrace yourself and me and sin in this way." But she didn't. Now, this part of the passage that talks about her being purified from her uncleanness, well, that lets us know why she was taking the bath when she was. She wasn't taking a bath to relax, but according to the law in Leviticus 15, after a woman's menstruation, she was considered impure for 7 days. But after that, she was able to ceremonially purify herself and be around people again. So think about a woman's fertility cycle. Most women are fertile for only a handful of days, and those usually come about a week to 10 days or so after her period. So isn't it interesting that God gives us this detail, letting us know that this was a time when Bathsheba would be fertile, that it would be very easy for her to become pregnant? Also, it's very interesting to note that David, now the king, didn't go to her himself, but he had her brought to him by one of his royal guard. David is dragging other people into his sin too. He gets them to aid and abet him in this affair. Bathsheba returns to her house, whether that night or the next morning, the text doesn't tell us, and then discovers that she's pregnant. It can't have taken more than a month to learn of this, considering she just ended one cycle. Because she was pregnant, though, the sin would be found out. There was no chance of keeping it a secret. Everyone would know, and the shame and disgrace would follow. She sends a message to David telling him she's pregnant and basically asking for help. Notice that she had to send him a message. They had their affair, committed their sin, and then they went about their daily lives as if nothing had happened. This wasn't a recurrent thing until she finds that she's pregnant. She's now asking for help in preventing a scandal for both of them, in keeping her safe from the law of the time, which would lead to her death by stoning. All of those things were going through her head right about now. Her husband is out fighting for the king, for her and all the people. The king should have been out too. But instead, the king was home. And so was she, and while her husband risked his life for them, they sinned against him together. She knows that at the best, she'll be shunned by the community and have no way to provide for herself and for the child. She knows, too, that she is powerless to prevent this from happening. Now, I stopped here on purpose today, obviously, but my question here today, as we are about to begin to see the fallout from David's poor choice and from his abuse of power, is this: how often do we tell ourselves the same thing? How often do we knowingly sin, saying to ourselves, "It won't hurt anyone else"? Every action we have has a consequence, and every consequence touches lives. We have to stop trying to justify our sins and start avoiding temptation and sin as we live. No, we're not perfect, and yes, we will sin. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try to avoid it. Seriously, David was human. He was not superhuman. I challenge you to look back at all the amazing ways that David did listen to God in light of these five verses and the ones that are coming. It is possible to listen to God and follow his commands and to be blessed and to live in his grace. It's also possible to be called a man after God's own heart and sin, as we see from David. David didn't have his eyes on God at this point, and we can see it in him. But when he did have his eyes on God, the amazing things that God did through David are not to be discounted. And one more time, it needs to be said, we're human, just like David. Your highs may not be as high as David's, and your lows may not be as low, but God can use all of us to his glory, if we'll let him.
Well, thank you, Beth. And Beth's study guides, as well as the 10-minute podcasts of these presentations, are all available in our archives under the Bible Studies tab of our website, naomistable.com. Nancy and I will be back with more on this in just a moment.